Protect your dream home with American Family Insurance. And you can weather any storm. You'll also save up to 25% by bundling home, auto, and life. American Family Insurance. Get a quote. Find an agent at AmFam.com.
Products not available in every state. Discounts may not apply to all coverages on an auto or home policy. Discounts do not apply to life insurance policies. Visit AmFam.com to learn how discounts may apply to you. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating companies, American Family Life Insurance Company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.
Well, hi everyone. And before we start this week's episode, we have a little bit of news. And I'm laughing because this is what, Alex, the third time we've sat down to record this week at this point?
pretty much, yeah. Yeah, we recorded this is like a little bookend of the episode this month's episode, and we recorded it yesterday, not knowing what the future of charging stations would be. But yeah, I managed to find. Do you want to explain why this show is coming to an end, and we'll go into it?
Yeah, we jumped ahead, but that's okay. So we recorded this week's episode. I think Tuesday. We recorded on Tuesday. And at the time, I was going through the process of getting a job offer from an EV charging company. And I won't say which one, but very excited. And they knew about the podcast because it had actually come up in the interview. And, you know, I told them about it. And I said to them, and they'd never mentioned it before. But I said to them when we were going through some of the bits and pieces, like, you know, oh, how we're going to do the right to work stuff, which is really laborious, where you have to go and... I was nearly going to have to travel up to London for a 5-minute meeting to show them a copy of my passport and everything.
Mm.
In the end, they've arranged it so that someone can actually come to Bournemouth and do it because there's a few of us. Anyway, that's beside the point. But I said, hey, just to check, because it was a friend of mine had sort of prompted me to check about conflict of interest. You know, look, we're reporting on EV charging and EVs. I'm going to be working customer support for this charging company. So we thought, well, we better check. And on the phone, they said, oh, yeah, no, I don't think that's going to be a problem, but I will double check with my manager and with marketing. Anyway, they come back and said, yeah, we've got a problem. Basically, at the moment, as it stands, it's either take the job or do the podcast. If you want to do a podcast, we have to retract the job offer. Okay. So I said, look, okay, listen, you know, maybe there's a way we can meet in the middle. I think, you know, maybe me and Alex talked to them and sort of outlined why it wouldn't be a conflict of interest. And I called Alex and said, look, this is the situation. And Alex said, you were very amenable to speaking to them, weren't you, to try and work out something?
Yeah, wouldn't have been a problem.
Yeah, we're not really a review show. We are factual news. Anyway, they come back and said, look, you know, that might be possible down the line, but for now, we think we need to ask you to step away from a podcast to continue this one. I'm like, okay, that's fine. And Alex was very gracious, and I can't say how supportive Alex and Jay have been. It's been amazing. Said, obviously, you know, that's fine. Our plan at the time was to put the show on almost like an indefinite hold, because it might have been possible to restart it later. And that's what we recorded yesterday. We said, look, you know, farewell. Thank you for everyone. And I said, thank you to Alex. Well, Alex messaged me last night. Alex, what's changed in the last 24 hours?
So if you don't know, I've got a separate, I've got a podcast I do from the Interface website. It's called Creator Spotlight. Started it last year, sort of speaking to people who make things online, basically. It's in the name Creator. So YouTubers and that sort of thing. And I had a guest on, I think it was last month, a guy called Jim Starling. And he runs a really good YouTube channel by himself called Definitely Not a Guru. It was really good to have him on the podcast and things. And I was thinking yesterday, like, I don't really know that many people, but who have I had on the show that might be up for this sort of thing? And he was one of the first people I thought of. So I messaged him, and instantly he said, yeah, that sounds good. So hopefully in the next few months we'll be able to restart the show. It'll be me and Jim talking about EV news. And some of the stuff we've done on this show, I haven't had that much access to vehicles. But Jim's got quite a lot of access to press cars, that sort of thing. So we have a bit more on-hands conversation about actual vehicles and things that, like, what do you think of this vehicle you've driven, that sort of thing. So that'd be quite good, I think. So, yeah.
Fantastic. And look, I think that's fantastic. Look, it's always been a weakness of the show. Look, me and Alex were, I think anyway, and Alex might be shake his head in a second, but I think me and Alex play off each other quite well in terms of me asking the questions and,
yeah,
and stuff like that. And we've started to come into a groove, but I am ecstatic that Charging Status will probably after a little bit of a break mm-hmm. continue. So this is going to be the last episode of Charging Status in its current form.
Yep.
We are working, obviously, myself and Jay are going to be working with Alex to transition everything. There's no...
No hard feelings.
Well, no, absolutely not. This is a happy thing.
Yeah.
It also means that, look, being very honest, it means that I can focus my energy into Crosswires and Crosswires Live, which is a good thing because I didn't realize how much time being a streamer actually takes up.
Yeah.
But it also means that Charging Status, which, you know, I'm very, very proud to start with Alex, all off the back of what? One episode have you been on? It was on the back of that, the Road to EVs episode, wasn't it, that we started this?
It was, yeah. I think I messaged you afterwards and said, it'd be quite cool to do this sort of thing more regularly. And then I think you sat on it for a while and thought, oh, that'd be quite a good idea. So, and we just started it. So yeah, it was good.
And look, you know, I honestly, I think it's, it does make me smile that we're going from a James to a Jim. So it just means you, from now on, you only allow co-hosts whose name begins with a J. So honestly, best of luck to you and Jim. We'll be transitioning all of the domains, everything. We're going to try and make it so that basically there's no disruption to the feed, as little disruption to the feeds as possible. The only place that Charging Status will disappear from is the Crosswires website once we do the handover. That's the only place it will disappear from. But it should, I'm literally reaching out to our podcast hosting company today to see if we can transfer over to Alex's account, because thankfully Alex uses the same host for Creator Spotlight, which actually, can I do one little thing?
Yeah.
If you're looking for podcast hosting and you want to start a podcast, head over to crosswires.net/castos. We have an affiliate program. Alex, what's been your experience so far with Castos? Because nice way to round out the...
Yeah. When I started my own podcast, I didn't really know what to do. So I used SoundCloud, embarrassingly. And I asked James, like, how do you do this properly? Because it's broken. And he gave me a hand to do Castos and that sort of thing. And it's amazing. Like, I was trying to work out how to do season numbers and thinking, where are these options? And it's just all in Castos. They've got a really, really well done website template page. So you can even link up your own domain name, which didn't take that long. And then you can have it builds a website for you, which is really good stuff. It sort of complement my own interface website, which is, yeah, it's really good. It's really, really easy to get it set up, and the feed propagation seems really quick as well, which is really good.
And what's lovely is even on the basic plan, you're not limited by the number of episodes you can put out. You're not limited by the number of podcasts you can host or the storage. It's based on the number of downloads you get before you have to upgrade.
Mm.
And that means that we should be able to transfer Charging Status to Alex's account, which means he also then gets a separate website. I don't know if you knew this. Each podcast that you host gets its own website.
Yeah, that's good. Yeah.
It's really good.
Yeah.
So listen, best of luck to you and Jim.
Thanks.
Thank you for asking me, you know, like reaching out and asking me to do this with you all those months ago. It's been an absolute pleasure. And with that, on to my final episode of Charging Status. Well, hi everyone, and welcome back to Charging Status, the EV podcast that's focused on the last month of EV vehicles. Hang on, that's redundant, isn't it? EV vehicles. Hang on. Electric vehicle and charging news. How's that, Alex? Does that meet your journalistic standards?
That's much better.
Welcome back. Alex, good to see you as always. How are you doing?
I am very good. How are you doing?
I'm doing really well, you know. Things are good. It's been a really busy month, like from the Crosswires Network. You know, we've started streaming again, like really full-on streaming. I know you've dropped by a few times to see the chaos.
Yeah, it's good fun.
It's a lot of fun to stream, and I need to find some like car games to play. You know, like, I don't know, like, no, not Grand Theft Auto. Actually, no, I did play Crazy Taxi. I'm trying to do a tenuous link there. Anyway, Alex, it's been a lighter month this month. We've got no test drive this month, but you do have something very exciting coming up in April, May time. You've got something really cool coming up.
Yeah, so I think we discussed a little while ago about reaching out to some manufacturers about getting an actual proper press loan, because so the test drives we did in the past sort of, well, I think we mentioned they're legal, like, and then they're just a bit immoral, maybe, just going to dealerships and getting pretending to that you're interested in buying the car. Feels a bit immoral, but I reached out to MG last week, the week before, and they've agreed to send me a press loan of an MG4 end of April, beginning of May, which would be quite interesting. So the MG4, I think we spoke about it on the podcast before, really, really well-priced hatchback, really good range. And from what I've seen on Twitter, a lot of positive feedback. So I'd be interested to see how that works. I'll make sure I use it sort of for the whole week, sort of day-to-day use and that sort of thing. So
nice.
Yeah, it's good that one of my manufacturers has sort of recognised what we're doing, so it's quite good.
Yeah, it's a really interesting one, because of course, I think we both understand this. We won't name any other manufacturers, but we've asked for numbers, and look, without revealing our stats, we're doing really well. But I think the problem is that a lot of manufacturers and a lot of tech, vendors don't necessarily recognize that podcast is changing. So shows don't get the thousands and thousands of downloads they used to get per week. It's not, or per month. It's not happening anymore, unless your name is Joe Rogan. Don't say that name on this show. Anyway, that's going to be really exciting. So that's going to probably be our test drive in our May episode, which is awesome.
Definitely.
I still need to find a way to bribe you to drive that thing down to Bournemouth to come and pick me up, and we'll have a little spin along the coastal road or something. But, I guess the other news is since the last time we recorded, we've met in person.
Yes, I think that was last month. I can't remember. Time goes so quick, but yeah.
It does. But yeah, me and Alex actually met in person, and we're still here recording the show, so we actually must have got on. So there you go.
Yeah.
Awesome. Alex, let's kick things off with some car news. And do you know, the first time I saw this, all I could do was start singing the Gerry Anderson Stingray theme. You know, Stingray, Stingray. No, okay. That's past. Okay. This just looks incredible. The Corvette E-Ray. Wow.
Yeah, so a little while ago, I think it's called the C8 Corvette. They started selling it in the UK in right-hand drive for the first time, like in the entire history. If you wanted a Corvette before that, you'd have to import it from Clive Anderson, I think, and sort of get a left-hand drive version. So this Corvette's available in the UK. The news was on the 17th of January, Chevrolet announced that there's going to be an electrified version. It doesn't mean a full EV. It's just a hybrid version for now. I'm not sure if they've got a full EV one planned. But the interesting thing about this is it's four-wheel drive for the first time. And there's a lot of clips bouncing around the internet last month about people drifting it and that sort of thing. And it looked quite good fun, because traditionally the Corvette's rear-wheel drive. So this one is called the E-Ray Hybrid. And it was the same V8 engine as the standard Corvette, but with some electrical bits and pieces to help it be hybrid. As I mentioned, it's four-wheel drive, so when you're spinning it and that sort of thing, we'll try and find some clips to put in the description. It will spin up the rear tires, and you can sort of slide it quite easily like a Tesla. There will also, while it's not full electric, there will be an EV-only mode they call Stealth. A lot of hybrids have a EV-only mode with some level of range that it has. But yeah, it looks pretty cool.
It does look cool. I like the term stealth mode. I mean, you know, it's like for like Assassin's Creed sneaking up on other cars. No?
Or yeah.
Like, no? Yeah. I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, because a friend of mine was telling me this. Because EVs, when they are running normally, mm-hmm. when a car is in full EV mode, it makes so little noise, but they effectively have to put like a, I think it's, un, is it under 50? They have to put almost like a artificial noise so people know it's coming.
Yeah, there's a legal requirement for noises when you reverse, which you can hear across a car park sometimes. And also if you're moving in a car park, like I can't remember the exact speed, but it's at slower speeds when pedestrians are around, they do make a hum or like a spaceship noise. It's for safety, really, because you just can't, sometimes you can't hear them.
I mean, I just think they should just go whole hog reversing. Caution, Tesla reversing. Caution, Elon Musk is an idiot. Sorry. 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 When Marco Arment sells his Tesla, you know that things are bad.
Oh, I didn't realize that's what he's done.
Yeah, he sold the Tesla. He's looking at Rivian. So I should explain for people who aren't maybe in the tech space. Marco Arment is a developer, but he's also one of the co-hosts of the ATP, the Accidental Tech Podcast. And they somehow end up drifting off into car news, but more of their personal car news at the end of episodes. And he was saying that he's driven the Rivian R1T. Some really fascinating stuff going on. And he sold his Tesla. Look, we've kind of decided we're still going to cover Tesla news. We're just not going to be all like, oh, Tesla is the best EV. I think we're going to try and be, to be fair, we're always always fairly unbiased. But that aside, let's go back to our news. Can I do my best James May impersonation here?
Go for it.
Good news, everybody. The Dacia Extreme Spring EV is coming. Go for it.
So the Dacia Spring is quite a nice, cost-effective electric vehicle. It's not the most powerful thing in the world. The standard model has about 44 horsepower, more than enough to mill you around town and that sort of thing. But they've got a new Extreme model. It's not massively extreme, but it's got 64 horsepower with a new motor, and there's some other paint colours that they've added. There's a little bit of a price increase, so it's just bumped up by €4,000. So the extreme version starts at €22,000 in France, and it will start at the standard model is €20,000. So it's actually €2,000 more than the base model. But as of this recording, the Dacia Spring still isn't available in the UK at that price point. That would do really well here. I think this time last year, the Dacia UK bosses said they're working on getting the head office to sort out supply for the UK once demand has been sorted in Romania. So
they're saying that's probably going to be after 2024, isn't it?
That's right. Yeah. As you can imagine, it's quite popular so because of the price. So hopefully it'll come to the UK soon. So.
But I mean, at that 65 kilowatt version, the 22,300, that translates at the time of recording to 19,500. That's not bad for an EV and certainly not bad for a new car. It's very interesting to see, shall we say I don't want to say less popular, but the less prestigious brands being the ones to offer in affordable EVs. Yeah.
The whole car market at the moment is a bit of a mess. Just used cars being bumped up in price, and there's not many used cars that are cheap. So, yeah, electric. Well, I was looking at figures from a little while ago, and just some electric cars that were on sale 2 years ago just gone up massively. And with the need to move to EVs and some of the government regulations in London, it would be helpful to have some more affordable cars.
Absolutely. I mean, my dad's getting closer. My dad's getting sort of on the bandwagon now, thinking, I might get a plug-in hybrid. He's on that route. He can't justify the price. They can't justify the price of a full electric. So he's thinking maybe some sort of hybrid is his option. We shall see. All right. Yeah. Jeep Avenger.
Yeah. On the last episode, we spoke about the Jeep Avenger. It was announced, and we put a link to Johnny Smith's video down in the description. But yeah, they've announced that a 4x4 version will be coming of the electric Jeep. So the Jeep Avenger is the first model that Jeep has ever launched that will be only in Europe, so it won't be offered in the US. They've had 7,000 pre-orders so far, which is actually quite a lot, and it'll be based on the same platform as the Peugeot e208. But for some reason, when they spoke about the 4x4 version, with some of the messaging, they did give a clear distinction between battery electric vehicle version and the 4x4 version. So we'll read into that as you want. It might be that the 4x4 version might be a hybrid or a plug-in hybrid. Again, we'll have to see. So they've announced that the 4x4 version will go on sale in 2024. So we'll have to see. So have a wider track, larger wheels, improved approach and departure angles. So far, as I said, Jeep haven't said anything concrete on what will power it. So we'll have to see.
Are there many full 4x4 EVs at this point? Because I know the Defender isn't out yet in its EV form. Do we have you know, do we have like, oh, what's the word? Like a proving ground, a proof of, not proof of concept. Do we have a precedent for 4x4 EVs?
Not massively. So there's a Defender rival called the Ineos Grenadier. So that was launched 5 years ago. And there was a, because it looks so similar to a Defender, I think they got sued initially. So that one, they've got a electric version they're working on. In terms of something that's actually for sale, there's the only real thing is a Maxus T90 EV pickup truck, which I think is four wheel drive. But in terms of traditional off-road vehicles, there isn't anything, I don't think. Not really. I think Range Rover or Land Rover have a Range Rover EV they're working on as well. But I don't at the moment, I don't think there is.
So we're not likely to see the opening credits of Emmerdale Farm changing anytime soon to include an EV Land Rover instead of...
There is some stuff over in America. So the Hummer, there's a Hummer EV that's on sale now. I think that's 100,000. It's a Jeep, GM are quite proud of that. And there's also a Chevrolet pickup truck. Also the Ford F-150 Lightning as well.
Okay. So there's stuff over in the States, just not here. It's the R1T, I'm imagining, will probably be four-wheel drive, the Rivian R1T.
Oh, yeah. And the R1S as well. So.
Oh, the R1S is four-wheel. Okay. So it's just us. I guess that's because we obviously like the Hummer. The joke with the Hummers has always been they won't fit on UK roads. And I think that's a big factor to 4x4 adoption over here. And plus, we don't really need 4x4s unless you were really. Living like, wait, well, you know, I guess if you live in the countryside and like you are actually a farmer or you live in Wales, maybe, very, you know, Scotland, then maybe, you know, maybe you've got a reason to have an EV. But going completely like opposite sizes, opposite scales.
Yeah,
I love this. I mean, this is a thing that interests me quite a bit because we've, you know, like Fiat. So we're talking about Fiat and Citroen here, but they are obviously both part of Stellantis.
Yeah.
And it's very interesting to me the way that works in terms of car models. What are Fiat planning to do to that little Ami?
So the Citroen Ami went on sale in the UK last year, the year before, and it was initially designed, I think we spoke about it before on the podcast, initially designed as a cheap car for 14-year-olds in France. So it's called a Voiture sans permis license. It was a very, very affordable little car. Because Opel and Vauxhall are part of Stellantis as well, so what Opel have done is just simply a rebadging of the Ami called the Roxe. That's on sale in Germany. But what Fiat are planning to do is do a little bit more to it than just a simple rebadging. They want to put a fabric roof on it, for example. They want to change the light design. They want to do some work with the interior, so a new wheel design. So Citroën Ami's little tiny little city car, or city quadricycle, as I said, designed for younger people in France. But because Fiat and Citroën are part of Stellantis, I think Fiat said they want to plan a bigger overhaul of the vehicle. And then they might be calling it the Fiat Topolino, which is actually a hark back to a car from the last century. So
it's very interesting. Look, you know, I have to admit, this is a car. All right, this is going to sound crazy. As you all know, I won't ever be able to drive a car that requires any sort of license where my vision is, you know, a factor. But imagine this in a self-drive, not self-driver, is self-drive, full self-driving, full FSD on this little car.
Yeah, it'd be quite good. Yeah.
It's nice. It'd be perfect for me. Like, it might even fit down the alleyway where I live. I might even be able to park it outside the front door. And like, because very little else fits down that alleyway, as Alex well knows. It's not exactly.
Yes. Yeah.
It's not exactly an easy to find property anyway.
No.
Cool. But it makes sense, I guess. Is it fair to say, but the reason, like, so for example, the reason Opel have rebranded theirs and the reason that Fiat will be doing the tweaks is to appeal to their home markets? Because not, you know, obviously Fiat being Italian, they'll want to appeal to Italian customers with certain Italian features. And when I say features, I mean, like, you know, yeah, like design aesthetics that would appeal more along that line. Like the Fiat 500, for example, that obviously is a very Italian looking car. Yeah.
And with the Citroën Ami, they could do, so if you didn't know, the front and the back panels, they're exactly the same panel. They've just got different lights. And then interestingly, the doors, they're exactly the same door either side. So on one side, the door opens outwards, front to back. And on the other side, it opens the other way, like a suicide door. So they've to do that, they've saved on different panels, which is quite good. So if Fiat redesign it, they could produce similar panels and then keep the cost down as well, which is quite good. So
that is good. Again, that helps drive up EV adoption. Awesome. Now, when I first read this next headline, I'm thinking, hang on, you put that in the wrong section, but you haven't. So this is GridServe. The Aura Funky Cat. What a great name for a car. And what's going on here? What's the partnership?
So GridServe, they got two electric forecourts, they call them. So there's one in Braintree in Essex, and there's one in Norwich, I think. It's also in Kent, I think. So they've announced in January that... if you're not too familiar with GridServe, they've got two big forecourts, and then one of the things they offer is free test drives. So you can rock up, book a slot of half an hour, and you can borrow one of the vehicles they've got. So they've got Teslas, they've got MG4s, they've got then this new Aura Funky Cat car, and they've got a load of other cars you can just borrow for an hour. So they've partnered with Aura, which is part of Great Wall Motors in China. You can now rock up to the Braintree forecourt and test drive one of their cars, which is quite good. And the main benefit is there's no sales pitch. There's no questions that they're going to ask you, sort of how, like, financing and that sort of thing, because they just want to get you in a car and let you drive it. So it's good for people who are a bit unsure about electric cars. So this is actually the first electric vehicle from Great Wall Motors. It's a full electric vehicle that goes head-to-head with the ID3. I think we've spoken about it on the podcast before when it was announced. It's got a very fancy cabin, lots of leather and that sort of thing, facial recognition, 200-mile range just under. And it's £32,000 in the UK, which is actually like £7,000 cheaper than the ID3, which is a common occurrence at the moment. So yeah, there's a link in the article that I've written for the interface where you can contact GridServe to learn more, and you can arrange your free test drive. So that's, yeah, it's good to see.
Awesome. It does look quite cool. And no, Alex, Norwich is not in Kent. Alan Partridge would be. No, hang on, let me just double check. I think Norwich is in East Anglia, and Alan Partridge would be incredibly disappointed in your, you know. Yeah, it's in East Anglia.
Oh, okay.
Or is it Norfolk? Is it Norfolk? It's in Norfolk, I think. Yeah, Norfolk. It's in Greater Anglia. Okay, so
cool.
I would just say East Anglia. So yeah, it's not Kent. Okay. It's all right. We'll forgive you. We'll forgive you. And I'll leave you with this on that particular story. Lynn, I'm not driving a Mini Metro.
Also, just before we go on to the next story, GridServe have also got a new forecourt in Gatwick Airport coming soon as well. So that's quite exciting. So
that's kind of cool. And that makes sense because, you know, you may have parked your EV. Excuse me. So you may have parked your EV at airport parking.
Mm.
And, you know, you'll be able to, excuse me, I can't speak. And then you can, you know, go and charge it up at the EV forecourt on the way back from a flight.
Yeah.
Someone was telling me about this. So I don't know the name of a company because he wouldn't disclose who it was because it's a client of theirs. But there's a company who are working on the concept of putting EV chargers at the airports. And the idea is that you park your car, long-term parking, you plug it into an EV charger, and it kind of what it does is when you're there, say you're there for a week, it will use the charge on your car, on the car's batteries,
yep,
to reverse feed into the airport power grid.
Ah.
And then it will know when you're coming back, and it will then say, okay, well, I'm now going to charge a battery on the car back.
Yeah.
So effectively what the airport, and I don't know if it's Heathrow, it might be Heathrow, but the idea is that they'll effectively have a massive, almost like car park Tesla Powerwall,
yeah,
type situation. I think you get, apparently they give you like money, either money off your charging or pay you a fee. I mean, it could effectively, the way I'd imagine this working is it would effectively mean you've got free EV charging for them to be able to use your battery, as it were.
That's cool though.
It's like an interesting idea. Just thought I'd randomly mention that, you know.
Yeah, it might also depend on if the car you've got supports load to grid as well, because I don't think some cars support one. They only support one way charging. That's cool though. Yeah,
but because the F-150, that there's been so many videos of people connecting their F-150s up to their houses to do that, right? Yeah,
yeah. And the MG4 I was on about earlier, that comes with an adapter for a 3-pin socket. So you can plug it, you can plug a kettle in or something. I think some people have done that.
I like the idea of plugging a kettle into your car, though. That sounds like, I mean, when you think about it, though, okay, genuine thought. I assume if it's just got a 3-pin socket, mm-hmm. you could plug, like, you say you're going camping.
Yep.
You've then got what effectively a not a free, but included in the price of your EV AC inverter.
Yeah.
Okay. I like that. Okay.
It's a good idea, yeah.
So what's Suzuki up to then, Alex?
So there's quite a few fans of the Suzuki Jimny. So when it went on sale, I think it's back in 2015, I think, there was quite a lot of people that really loved it because it was like a reincarnation of the Jimny from ages ago. But unfortunately, the engine they used was very inefficient, so it produced a lot of CO2, so it got legislated out of existence. So it got discontinued a few months ago, I think it was last year now. In the time that they got rid of the passenger one, they had a commercial vehicle, which they could sell for a period of time, but again, that's been discontinued now. But there's still a lot of people that really love it, because it's sort of quite a nice, cute 4x4. By 2030, Suzuki have said they're going to launch an electric version of the Jimny. So in terms of electric vehicles, Suzuki's quite far behind. They haven't got any on sale. They haven't got any electric vehicles at the moment on sale. And some of their hybrids, they've had to borrow bits from Toyota, I think. So they've got two models. They've got a 4x4 and a state car, and they are just rebadged. They're rebadged Toyotas, unfortunately. So yeah, they haven't got any in-house bits and pieces. They're hoping by 2030 they're going to have, they're investing £3 billion in battery technology. And from 2024 onwards, they're going to launch 5 new electric cars. So they've sort of sat on sat around for a little period of time. But yeah, it'd be good to see the iconic Jimny come back, because it is quite a nice looking car. So
I've seen them around. It's got that. I like the design. It'd be cool to see that as an EV. You know, I would agree with you on that one. And it is interesting. You know, no EV platform of Rome. That's not a good starting point.
No. But the only thing they've released so far is like a silhouette with some backlight, and you could definitely tell from the pictures it was a Jimny. So they haven't said it in plain written, but they've released a picture. But they've also got some of the models planned. So they've got a EVX concept, which will be similar to the S-Cross. It's supposed to have 342 miles of range, which is actually pretty good. So
yeah, cool. Now, we spoke about competition to the ID3 earlier, but Volkswagen are apparently working on something a little bit fresher.
Yeah. So this is supposed to be released tomorrow. So we're recording on the 28th of February. Tomorrow is the 1st of March. And Volkswagen is supposed to reveal a refreshed ID3 next month. With the ID3, when they launched it in 2019 or 2020, they tried quite a few new things. They had a simplified interior. They had haptic buttons on the steering wheel, which some people don't like. The infotainment system's a bit interesting. A lot of touch controls and removal of a lot of physical buttons, which has been a big pain point for a lot of people. I've used the Mark 8 Golf, which has got a very similar infotainment system, and it is quite a pain to use. So they're planning on launching a new car with improved infotainment system. It's supposed to be the removal of the haptic buttons and a return to actual buttons. And also the heating controls are on a slider, and they're supposed to have some backlighting, because if you use them at nighttime, you can't see what you're doing. So it's been 2.5 years since the model was first introduced, and there's been lots of issues with software and infotainment system issues. So this refresh was supposed to be done a bit, little bit later, and due to the customer complaints and issues, they brought it forward to what VW had originally planned. There's also going to be a larger touchscreen for the infotainment screen, a 12-inch screen, and as I said, the elimination of the buttons, because you can't actually see what you're doing.
That'd be a bit of a problem, yeah. I mean, I do like the design. I mean, I like the design of the ID3. I like the idea, what they say, 12-inch touchscreens are nice, nice size screen to be putting into a car like that. And Volkswagen are fully on board with CarPlay, aren't they?
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. Quite a few of the bigger EV manufacturers, Rivian, Tesla, aren't doing Apple CarPlay or Android Auto either. And it's kind of not great from that point of view.
Yeah, I know. While some of the infotainment stuff in VWs isn't the best, like the OS of the actual system itself, the CarPlay integration is pretty reliable. So as courtesy cars, I've had a few of the new VWs, not electric ones, but the petrol stuff, and the wireless CarPlay connects instantly. So I'm pretty impressed with that.
That's cool. Awesome. Ah, now speaking of everyone's our friends at Tesla, what's Space Karen and his team up to?
So they announced a few days ago, actually, that they're going to open a new engineering headquarters in California. So they're going to be using the former headquarters of Hewlett-Packard, so HP. It's going to be a dedicated HQ for engineers to focus on R&D, and eventually, apparently, going to be used for robots, upcoming robots. So
that worries me slightly. But that's, I mean, that's a bit of an interesting sort of like convergence, isn't it, of our two of our two interests, tech and HP. I miss the good old days of HP. You know, when HP printers actually worked and weren't a ripoff. Sorry, I'm really trashing some vendors today, aren't I? I mean, it's
you are. You're burning bridges.
Well, you know, I mean, your hopes of getting a Tesla test drive are probably gone. To be fair, I think we burnt that bridge already after what we did, after what Crosswires did on Twitter as our parting gift to Elon. As I said, you know, I don't. I think the team at Tesla are probably running things fine without him. Mm-hmm. If that makes sense. Again, but it's interesting to see them expanding. Let's hope that brings genuine innovation. I really hope that does.
Yeah. Back in 2021, Tesla moved their main headquarters to Texas due to issues with the pandemic safety measures by California at the time. Tesla do have a factory in California still, in Fremont. I think that's their original factory. But it is interesting to see them move back to California. Elon said that this is their... Well, it's a company now with two HQs. They've got a main headquarters in Texas, and then they've got their engineering HQ in California. So it's supposed to open in... it's opened already. Yeah, it's opened earlier this week, or last week.
Oh, so. Cool. Awesome. Okay.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it does make sense. Like, you know, it makes sense that the engineers have that space, because California is probably maybe a better place.
For talent, yeah.
Yeah, well, that's what I'm thinking. And, you know, because would you want to ask a bunch of... Well, I don't know. I was going to say Texas hasn't really got... But Texas, of course, is home to, you know, was home to NASA for quite a while. So I don't... Yeah. Oh, they moved to Austin, Texas. Okay, interesting. More known for... Okay, interesting. All right. What's up next?
Yeah, so with Volkswagen's new EVs and some of their existing ones, they're going to be pivoting to using more recycled materials, which is good to see. So with the ID. Buzz, this is the Volkswagen's first electric vehicle that's has used a lot of recycled materials anyway. Yeah, so with the ID. Buzz, the van, basically, Volkswagen has used a lot of recycled ocean plastic, and they've used a lot of recycled bottles as well. So quite specific. They've used 63 500ml bottles in every ID. Buzz. And as a mixture of that and recycled plastic, at the very start of the initial ID.3 release, some elements of the car, I remember watching a video about it, some of them still used animal materials, so leather in places and that sort of thing. But at the time when that was announced, they had announced that they were planning on using more recycled and more natural materials. So as I said, with the ID. Buzz, it's sort of leading the way with their newer vehicles. So with the carpet and headliner, there's 100% recycled polyester. And the carpet, even the carpet as well, uses recycled plastic. And some of this innovation, which VW has said, will leak over to the ID.3, 4, 5, and 7.
Also, I love the name they're using for the material for the seat covers. Art Velour Eco.
Yeah.
What? I mean, well done, Vauxhall. I like it. It sounds interesting. I haven't had a chance to see an ID. Buzz or, you know, be inside one yet. But those seat covers look interesting.
Yeah, I mean that's more of an outgoing color. You kind of have more subdued, and then the commercial vehicle is a lot more hard wearing. The ID. Buzz Cargo, obviously, but yeah, it's good to see that in place. So
no, it makes sense. You know, as we're trying to strive, you know, the whole concept of EVs to help the environment, but we're still then, you know, companies are still using, you know, animal materials. I don't see. My opinion is we don't need animal materials in cars anymore. It makes no sense.
Agreed.
But that's my take. Awesome. All right. Speaking of German car makers and awful naming schemes. Oh, what is this?
Yeah, so this is the BMW i4 eDrive 35, with the 35 referring to the kilowatt hour battery pack, I think. I believe that's right anyway. So the main point of this story was to look at the BMW i4 eDrive 35. And this is a new entry level version of the model, which starts from £49,000, which is sort of lowering the barrier to entry with the i4. So eDrive 40 started at £7,500 more than that, so about £56,000, which is a lot for a saloon car, even electric. So it's good they sort of lowered the barrier to entry, but it's still not quite enough. The main difference is the battery pack. So the eDrive 35, you can find a 70 kilowatt hour pack. There's an 81 kilowatt hour pack in the eDrive 40 and the M50, sort of the models above. But the range is okay. The range is 299 miles. Which is
okay. Well, on that 70 kilowatt pack, that's pretty good.
Yeah, it's pretty good. Yeah,
it's not bad. The naming makes no sense then, because I was thinking that can't be the battery pack size, because that's that'd be tiny. But
yeah,
interesting. Okay,
I'm not sure what the point of that naming is. Audi have done a very similar thing with their petrol cars. They used to refer to the liter size. They're now just using random numbers, which are a bit confusing. This seems very similar, so I'm not entirely sure why.
No, very, very interesting. But yeah, again, nice looking car, but unfortunately at that price point, you know, realistically, we say 49,000. You're getting a fiver's change from 50K. It's an expensive car. Oh, okay. Nissan.
Yeah.
Now, I have to say, I am a big fan of the Leaf. I don't know why. There's something about the Leaf that I like. I think it's possibly because it's the only EV I've actually, the only fully EV car that I've actually been in.
Okay, fair enough. So when I was writing this story, initially seems like if you skim over it, that Nissan are building electric trucks, but this isn't the case. So what they're doing is they're going to be testing two electric trucks in the port of Los Angeles, one from Nikola, which is not related to Tesla in any way, and one from Kenworth. So they're going to be testing two of those trucks to use to ferry passenger cars from the port of LA when they come into the country to dealerships around LA. So it's quite a good testing point. As well as using two trucks, they're going to be putting charging points in the port of LA to keep the trucks running, and this is sort of a proof of concept to start with. They'll likely expand out and use more electric trucks to ferry cars to and from dealerships.
That's really interesting. Again, but not, you're right, at first glance that's what I thought. Oh, Nissan are making EV trucks, but it's not really their thing, so why not use? I love the fact that we've now got two different EV companies, one called Nikola, one called Tesla, which of course are both references to the same person, to Nikola Tesla. I like that, and honestly it does make sense. You know, we so not to do too much cross promotion, but Crosswise, the episode that's coming out next week, so next Monday by the time this episode comes out, which should be tomorrow hopefully, depends how well I do editing, is going to be looking at the environmental impact of tech. And of course one thing we always have to consider is the supply chain, so it's great to see them considering using EVs to make those journeys, because obviously, you know, it'd be quite ironic if an EV, say the Leaf, is being delivered to to dealerships by combustion cars. So this is really interesting to see. Okay, cool.
Yeah, it's good. Yeah, there's just one more bit of car news. We've got the Abarth 500e. So I think we spoke about it on the last episode. It was sort of announced. So it was announced back in November 2022, but they've now revealed the pricing for it. It'll actually end up being £38,500 for the launch edition, which is, it's sort of, you wince when you see that price a little bit.
Scorpion Isima.
Yeah.
What?
I think that's how you say it.
I mean, I'm going to... Please, anyone who can pronounce that better than us, do correct us in an audio clip. You can email podcast@chargingstatus.net and yell at us for pronouncing that. cheaper of options available down the line. Okay.
Yeah, so this is like the launch edition, so it's going to have a lot of extra bits and pieces on the cars. The interior... images look really good. A lot of Alcantara in use. But yeah, so for the launch edition, Abarth are only going to be are only going to be making 1,949 units, which isn't just a random number plucked out the air. It's actually the year that the company was founded.
Ah.
Yeah, back in 1949. And obviously Fiat bought them in the 80s, I think. So now they're part of Stellantis. Yeah, it's quite a big price increase over the standard Fiat 500e, but you are getting a more powerful car. And due to the extra power the car is going to produce, the range has taken a bit of a hit. So I think you do lose some range, but I don't think they've revealed the actual specs yet. They have, sorry. The standard Fiat has 199 miles of range, but the Abarth version has 155 miles, so you do lose about 50 miles of range.
Ouch. Okay, I'm just looking. Okay, so the standard Fiat. Okay, but it does have more horsepower.
It does, yeah.
You've got... now, let's have a look at this. It's interesting. Hang on. 0-60 is handled in 7 seconds. So it's 2 seconds...
faster than 60, yeah.
Faster to 60 than the 500e itself. But what's interesting is that the 0-60 is slower than the petrol, than the Abarth 695.
Yeah, it is. Yeah.
That's
I think it's just the weight of the vehicle. Yeah.
Right. We've about to... Okay. Okay. And, of course, there are other measurements. Oh, I see. Okay, so what you've obviously put here, this makes sense. So, for example, 25 to 35, so that midpoint acceleration is 1.5 seconds compared with 2.5 seconds for a petrol 695. So I guess you can't... 0-60 isn't the only measurement, is it, really, we need to be thinking about with these?
Yeah. So acceleration overtaking people, that's quite good.
And only 350 of those 1949 units are coming to the UK.
Yep, that's right.
Okay, all right. Oh, an 85 kilowatt charging. That's 10 to 8% in what, 35 minutes? That's not bad. No,
it's all right, yeah.
Not bad at all. Okay, awesome. Again, probably not a car I would personally go for, but anyway.
No, so I'm hoping to drive one of those at some point. One of the, not the Bath one, but the Fiat one. So be quite good.
Let's move on to charging news.
Yeah. If you glance at this article, you'll be a bit, I think it's a bit confusing what the article's about. So it says Subway.
Yeah.
Subway's partnering with Gen Z to offer charging at its US store. So you think, well, is it partnering with young people to do this? Or no, it's a little bit a little bit weird. So there's a company in the US called Gen Z EV Solutions, which is an interesting name. It's famously, Subway is one of the largest fast food chains in the world. They've got the most locations out of everyone. So in the US, obviously a lot of fast food stores in the US have got parking out front. Generally over here, they're either at retail locations or they're on high streets. But a lot of them are in sort of locations where they've got parking. So Subway have decided to partner with a charging company to bring EV charging to Subway stores across the US. This rollout will obviously take quite a few years, but they'll start doing it at any new stores that they open or any stores that they remodel. So any stores that they go back in, they're back at and remodel, they'll add charging to. So the first sites to benefit will start later this year in the US. So that's pretty good.
It's really interesting. And as you said, that's not likely to come because there are some Subway locations that are in retail parks.
Mm-hmm.
So they are, but here's the deal. Those car parks don't belong to the Subway. They belong to the retail parks. So the Subway probably won't have the ability to add those charging points there.
Yeah.
But I can see other fast food places that do have their own car parks doing this more. I mean, obviously, look, this is US news, but it's still relevant because it shows the sort of places we're going to start to see EV charging. Look, I mean, next thing you'll be telling me that Greggs are going to start offering EV charges. Each sausage roll comes with a 5-minute EV charge.
Yeah, I went to a McDonald's up north somewhere a while back, and they had two charge point chargers, which were at the time that was quite busy. So standard cars had parked in the space, but that sort of location, because generally McDonald's own the car parks that they have. So yeah, what's also interesting, they're not going to just put chargers up. It's going to have canopies and picnic tables and toilets and other amenities, and also Wi-Fi for the guests. So generally, if you go and charge somewhere, there's nowhere to go to the toilet and that sort of thing. So it's good that they're putting that sort of thing in. So
that is good. That's gonna be helpful, because you know that. Do you know, it's one thing that frustrates me about Bournemouth is we have loads of toilets along the beach, But they close them like at like ridiculously early times in the day. So you're out for a walk, you get caught short. I'm like, yeah, there's nowhere to go to but use the facilities. Like, come on. Like, come on. Sorry. Not that you need to know the number of times that I've had to very quickly rush home. Yeah, that's all I'm going to say. Oh, dear. I guess we got, what, one more bit of charging news?
One more bit, yeah. I wasn't too familiar with this acronym, HPC, but it actually stands for high power charging. So I guess that's anything above 100 kilowatts. In France and Italy, Ionity have rolled out new stations on important routes in France and Italy. So for longer journeys, for example, there's a quite a main route between Lyon and Nice and Lyon and Marseille. And they've opened up a brand new charging location. So it's a large car park with capacity for up to 350 kilowatt speeds. And there'll be space for 16 electric vehicles there. And one of the things I found really interesting with this, so a common complaint with electric vehicles is if you roll up and plug into charge and someone parks up next to you and starts charging, the speed for both of you will lower. So you share some infrastructure when you charge. So you could see 150 kilowatt speeds, but they'll drop to like 80 or 90 and sort of increase the amount of time you have to be there. So Ionity have gone to the work and also the money to sort of put this in, and there's going to be no power sharing. So each charging location, like stand at the place, is going to have a direct feed back to the power input for that car park. Means that if someone else rocks up next to you, they're not going to impact your speed, which is really good.
So each of these charging bays is going to have up to a 350 kilowatt charging.
Yeah, that's good, though. They've gone to a lot of expense to that, I'd imagine.
So just to put that into perspective, that's a total potential charging capacity at any one time for that 16 bays of 5,600 kilowatt hours.
Yeah, that's huge.
That's huge.
Yeah, so they've had to go for a lot of work to put a lot of power capacity in for that.
I'd imagine that involves substations and stuff, because you won't be able to draw that off a single...
No.
I'm not an electronics engineer. I don't know anything about how this stuff works. Neither of us claim to be, but that's fascinating.
Yeah.
And now, here's a question, something I want to try and understand. And if you... So, say, for example, you're charging at a 350 kilowatt-hour charger.
Mm-hmm.
I take it it all depends on what your car supports. So it will go down to what your car supports. It's not like it's going to charge your, if your car only supports, say, 100 kilowatt hour charging, that's all you're getting. It's not going to then start magically increasing your speed.
Yeah, that's right. So you know, when, like, with a USB-C device, you plug it in, there's a little bit of they do a handshake. So there's a microchip in the USB-C cable, there's a microchip in your phone, and they do a bit of a handshake to work out what they can charge at. Same thing works with EV charging. So when you plug it in, the car and the charger talk to each other to make sure they're not going to blow up each other, basically. So you're right, yeah. So the car knows what speed it can charge at, and then it will negotiate that with the charger. There aren't many cars that can even do 350 kilowatt. So it's good that they're future-proofing it. I think the Porsche Taycan, that's one of the ones that can charge at some ridiculously high speeds. But obviously, as time goes on, we'll probably see bigger and better things from cars. So, yeah.
Interesting. And I take it we are getting to a point now where, you know, we've talked about that 35 minutes from 10 to 80%. We're starting to see where you don't have to leave your car there for hours to charge now. It is becoming yes, it's still always going to be longer than a petrol fill-up. But, I mean, they do say that drivers should take good rest breaks every now and then.
Yeah.
So maybe even is there a way to encourage that? Yeah.
What's also interesting about this bit of news is that France have got a legal requirement now for new charging locations that they must have a canopy, and that canopy must be solar panels.
Oh.
Yeah.
Interesting, which means I take it part of that power will then, what, go back into the charging, to feed the charging grid?
Yeah. I'd imagine so, yeah. So Ionity, there's two locations are opening in France and two in Italy. So one of these locations is on that important road with 16 EV spaces. There's also one, they've opened up a location right next to a hotel, the Hotel Hampton by Hilton in Fiano Romano. Again, apologies for that pronunciation. But it's quite interesting, they've opened it right next to a hotel.
No, it is. It makes perfect sense. You know, and look, that kind of brings us in. So we don't have a test drive this month, but I have a little bit of a story from a friend who I thought I'd share because it's really interesting. It ties in nicely to this whole concept of how you journey plan, how you make the most of EV charging. And he was saying that his parents were coming over on the ferry from Belgium to Ireland. And one of the things you can apparently do is book EV charging spaces on the ferry.
Mm.
So I didn't realise that was a thing. So apparently they are at the front of the ferry, which means A, you're right at the front, so you board first. You're then connected to the charger for that whole trip. Now, I mean, that seems... There's that sort of me thinking, okay, an EV car charger in a ship that's on the water. But then, actually, there's loads of other electrical systems on the boat, so it's not really going to be an issue. And they basically said, yep, they plug in their Teslas, which means that by the time they've got off a boat, you know, they've maybe arrived at the port with, say a 60% charge.
Mm-hmm.
Get off a ferry, they're fully charged. They could just go straight off to their destination, which I think is fantastic. And it kind of goes back to that whole concept we were talking about earlier with, you know, airport charging. And, you know, I guess also, you know, when you go to rent your car in, is it April when you're going to Tenerife? Yeah. In theory, car rental places should never have to worry about there being enough charge, because my feeling will be they will have chargers at the bays that those EVs are rented from. So in theory, you never have to worry about filling up a tank, and it means that your fleet's ready to go. It means that people, I think that term charge anxiety, I think we've talked about this before, but I'm seeing less and less people talk about that. Although I did see a wonderful review. I'll find the link. Jay sent it to me. Someone doing like almost like a parody review on a combustion car, saying, oh, you know, you've got to refill it every now and then, and taking that parody away from, you know.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Yeah, I just had a quick look. Apparently, I'm not sure who your friends shipped, or what do you call it? Sailed with, I guess.
Sailed with,
yeah. As the Irish ferries are doing it as well. So I guess between Dublin and Holyhead, it says that there's charging on those ships as well, which they're not the most fastest thing in the world. It says the one between Dublin and Holyhead is only 7 kilowatts. But if you think, I don't know how long those journeys are, like 4 or 5 hours maybe, that's going to be
four or five hours. I mean, I've done that journey. It's a relatively long journey, yeah.
That's going to be quite good. And I imagine they've got to sort of outweigh all the electrical demand of the ship as well. But it says also Dublin to Cherbourg, it says 3.7 kilowatts. Yeah. It does also say...
Not fast charging, but...
No, it's not that fast, no. It does also say, as you said, reserve a space, and then also bring your own cables.
Oh, that makes sense, because, yeah, and all EVs can use... Is it the CCS standard?
Yeah, it's Type 2 or CCS, yeah.
Right, okay. What's common more here in the UK, or is just whatever's available?
Well, the most common thing is CCS. So the CCS connector is really cool. It's got two built into one. So CCS is that weird double O shape, kind of.
Oh, yes, yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then Type 2 is using one half of that. So Type 2 is for AC charging, slower. And then CCS is DC charging. So usually you can use two different types of chargers on the same car, which is quite good.
That's really cool. Awesome. I think that wraps up this episode. Alex, as always, thank you. Alex, because obviously all this news, we're very, very grateful, comes from the interface. Where can people find the interface if they want to check out more car news and more tech news in general?
Yeah. So the interface is available on, it's available on the internet, I was going to say.
Hang on, you tell me there's a print edition as well. Is that available in all good news agents, right?
All good shops, yeah. you can find the interface at theinterface.uk. So as James said, website for all tech news. There's videos as well on our YouTube channel. We've also got, we're also on Twitter as well, the underscore interface underscore. We're on Mastodon as well. There'll be a link down below for that. So yeah.
awesome. And of course, you can find more tech content from Crosswires in podcast, and some we are. I've got YouTube videos coming soon. The next YouTube video should be a nice look at the Panic Playdate, which you got a chance to use that. Did I let you try a Playdate when you were here?
I had a quick go on it when I met you, yeah. Yes, yeah. Cool little device.
It's lovely, isn't it? It's so cool.
Yeah.
So we'll be doing that. And of course, lots of podcasts and crosswires.net/live. You can see our streaming schedule. If you want to see me and Jay try and play computer games, come and check that out. Thank you for listening and keep on charging.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.